The list of the topics, themes, and subject matter featured in this episode has been included in the description below. This is Dicecape Podcast. We begin with a wide shot of the sun rising on the horizon, casting an eerie morning haze with the dense fog that glides across the surface of the quiet bay waters of the Harborfront District. We push in on two weathered fishermen embarking on their morning ritual of cleaning crab traps. With callous hands and salt-encrusted faces, they battle against the relentless grip of dried seaweed and barnacles that cling to the trap like stubborn parasites.
"Can you believe this mess these traps are in, Jack?"
the fisherman grunts as he struggles to dislodge a particularly stubborn cluster of barnacles. Jack grunts in agreement, wiping sweat from his brow.
"Aye, seems like the seaweed's gotten thicker lately. Must be the tides."
As they continue this mundane task, their eyes scanning the water, something odd catches Jack's eye. Jack reaches over, smacking the other fisherman in the arm, pointing in the direction of something bobbing in the water.
"Pete, do you see something bobbing near the pillar there?"
We watch as Pete stops his work, turning to face the direction Jack is pointing, standing up to get a better look. We follow Pete's gaze as his eyes lock onto something. To the naked eye, it would appear to be a mere piece of flotsam, tethered to one of the concrete pillars that supports the creaking pier. But as we push in closer and closer, the tide beginning its slow retreat, it becomes evident this is not debris from a boat, but a body. As the realization hits the two fishermen, they quickly grab some of their equipment, both filled with a mixture of curiosity and trepidation. They approach, getting the best angle to try and help whomever this is. Summoning every ounce of strength and courage, they maneuver their equipment with precision, hooking onto the figure and slowly drawing them towards the safety of the pier. With each tug and heavy breath, as if they were pulling a crab trap from the water, they pull this waterlogged body onto the pier, their breaths caught up in their throats. Jack's eyes widen in horror as haze begins to surround them, the two fishermen completely unaware. The sound in this space becomes ethereal as Pete kneels down to the body, inspecting its back.
"Jack, look at these marks. Those are no ordinary wounds. Nothing I've ever seen. It looks like..."
Pete brushes the hair away from the figure's face and stumbles backwards as bright blue light and shadow emanates from it. The two fishermen stumble, taking several steps backward, the haze around them growing thicker as shadow continues to pour from the lifeless body's face. The shadows wisp around them, blocking out the morning glow of the sun, the sound of waves crashing against the pier becoming strange echoes reverberating through the space until they are silenced by the sound of a knock, the rhythm steady, like a beating heart, as the pier is consumed in shadow. Victor, you awake in your bed to a knock on your door. Your sheet soaked with sweat. You're breathing heavy as you sit up. The knocking continues a steady cadence to the strikes. What does Victor do?
Victor takes a little bit of a second to regain his composure. He tries to clean himself up as quickly as he can without making too much noise in his room. And he goes to open the door, just kind of slightly creaks it open, not fully opening it.
As the door swings open, standing there is a middle-aged woman, dark hair that is held up in a black hair clip with beautiful golden filigree. Her outfit is simple, a pair of black slacks and a high-neck tunic with intricate embroidering upon it, and a black duster jacket resting over her shoulders. In one of her hands, she carries a wooden walking stick with a small bronze astrolabe atop it that is currently resting in the crook of her left arm, and upon her nose, a pair of spectacles that are heavily tinted, and you see light scarring peeking out from the sides of her eyes. Good morning, Mr. Crowell. My apologies for waking you.
No, it is okay. What time is it?
8 in the morning.
Oh, yeah, that is quite early for me. I am not used to these early morning wake-up calls. Is there something that I can help you with?
You have been requested to the chapter house for a meeting between your circle and your lightkeeper, Alexandria, at noon sharp.
Do you know if it's like a good meeting or if it's like a bad meeting?
They just stare.
An okay meeting?
Alexandria will inform you when you arrive.
Do I need to bring anything, or is it just expected of me to show up?
Well, I would change into something else. You smell of sweat.
I sweat a little bit, but didn't know it was that bad.
Victor will kind of like sniff himself.
I mean, okay, yeah, I can like take a quick bath. Okay, yeah, 12 o'clock. Yeah, I'll be there. Do I send word, or I'll just show up? What was your name again? I didn't quite catch it.
Oh, how rude of me. Tala Yun is my name.
And we have not met before, no?
We have not, no.
Well, it is good to make your acquaintance.
The pleasure is mine.
Will you be at the meeting, or... Sorry, am I asking too many questions? Should I just go?
No, never too many questions. I will be there, yes.
Okay, can I ask just one more question? Is this about the next assignment, or is this about the assignment we just did, or...
She grabs her walking stick, places it down in front of her, and she begins to turn, but as she does, she just says, both, and she walks away.
Okay, so it's like a recap, and it's like... Okay, yeah, I see.
She's walking. She's already walking away from Victor.
Okay, I'll see you later.
You just see her right hand goes up, giving a wave of acknowledgement.
Victor sits in their doorway for a second, like watching after her. And as he finally turns to go back into his room, he says,
"Oh, Krish, I forgot her name again."
You know, close his door.
We fade away in this little apartment here in the South Levee and make our way to a small coffee shop, located on the edge of City Park within the verdant Birchway District. Outside the dark natural wood exterior, we see an outdoor seating area surrounded by a small cast iron fence that wraps around the property. Usually, these seats are filled with customers enjoying the beauty of the park, but on this cool, gloomy day in Nevermore, the warm interior of the coffee shop keeps the patrons of the establishment within its walls. Pushing inside, we find the faint sound of chatter, the aroma of freshly brewed coffee and tea. Some of the folks within this establishment are enjoying a decadent artisan sandwich and a cup of hot coffee. Others sit in comfy chairs in various nooks around the outside of the coffee shop's interior. At the small tables scattered about the center of this little cafe, colleagues and friends enjoy each other's company. Amongst the patrons, sitting and conversing, is Professor Wright, and across from him, Eleanor Sinclair, fellow member of Candela Obscura. How are you holding up from your injury? I know it's been a few weeks, but how are you managing?
Well, I mean, I think it gives my face some personality. What do you think?
I mean, I would agree. I'm glad it wasn't worse, and I'd be lying if I said that it wasn't attractive. It gives you an edge, which I'm quite fond of.
You know, for one of the first times when you said that, I was almost at a loss for words. But, you know, every time I look in the mirror, it makes me realize I can stand on my own 2 feet in more ways than one. I think that confidence helps as well.
She looks to Arthur. I think you're a lot more capable than you give yourself credit for. You're quite capable. And from what I read in the dossier, your last assignment proves that point.
Ugh, I'm sure they embellished.
Oh, shut up.
You know, as a completely off-the-cuff question, did I leave you with papers before degree? Did you ever do that? Am I going to get in trouble?
Yes, I left them at the chapter house. What, you didn't pick them up? I graded them all.
Oh, so I'm in trouble either way. Okay. No, I did not pick them up.
Oh, well, they're still there, so you could probably pick them up sometime. So, have you heard anything back how the mother and daughter are doing?
Last I heard, it's, physically, okay. Mentally, of course, as you would imagine, probably pretty traumatized. I think Dom probably goes and checks in on them here and there, make sure they're okay. I think they're as good as they can be, given everything.
Right. I mean, knowing what happened to her husband, and can imagine the little girl. But, well,
as she ponders that thought, you hear the tap of a stick on your table. Excuse me. As you hear this voice, Eleanor's eyes drop to the figure, and she immediately stands up, embracing them in a hug.
Talayun, my goodness, it is wonderful to see you. Alex had mentioned you were back in Nevermore, but I wasn't expecting to see you so soon. Arthur, this is Tala, a fellow colleague of our organization.
Well, it's my pleasure. And I'll reach out my hand to shake theirs.
They immediately go and give a firm handshake before releasing it, clasping her hands back together.
Alexandria told me that you and Arthur would be grabbing coffee this morning and that you would be here. They have requested your attendance at the chapter house by noon. Eleanor, it may be best if you head there with Arthur as well. All right, I can do that. We can leave together after we finish up here.
I mean, do we have enough time to finish the coffee at first, I'm assuming?
Tala looks to Arthur, a slight grin on her face.
Would you like one to go as well? I mean, you can go with us too if you want.
No, that's all right. I still have some others to track down. But you can finish your coffee, of course. I wouldn't want to ruin... well, enjoy your coffee, and we'll see you at noon.
And Tala turns away, proceeding toward the front door, leaving Arthur and Eleanor to finish their coffee in conversation. As we shift our focus away from the two of you to another district here in the city, to the vibrant and mystifying Crimson Lantern District, where it is still quiet, the last place in the city of Nevermore to wake. Yet there are those that linger on the streets, heading to their workshops to begin their next art masterpiece or train for an upcoming theater performance in one of the grand halls within the Obsidian Lane district. As more folks take to the streets within the Crimson Lantern, we push in on one of those individuals. Broad shoulders and a familiar heavy footfall giving their alias away. The one Dominic Kaminsky, as he heads towards a newsstand, where a grizzled man sells magazines, newspapers, soda pop, packs of cigarettes, and candy. Next to the stand, on a leash, is a small dog, a mix between a Jack Russell Terrier and a Dachshund with short, dark fur. Its tail wags and whimpers excitedly as Dom approaches, the man in the booth looking out.
I thought that might be you, Sarge. Poppy only gets excited like that when you show up. I'm getting to think she loves you more than me.
Well, I mean, her judge of character could be better, I think.
So, I take it you're here for something?
Yeah, what's news?
Well, the news. I've had somebody kind of look into some stuff for you. That woman you've been tracking, they were telling me, apparently she's been hanging out at this place called the Silk Noir. That's some sort of underground cabaret here in the Crimson Lantern District that my contact told me about. They wouldn't tell me where it is. Said it could get them killed if they shared that info. I know that's not the most helpful information, but they did say it's run by a group of smugglers that go by the name the Red Hand, I think.
Red Hand.
The Red Hand, mm-hmm.
Okay. Silk Noir. Mm-hmm. Red Hand. Gotta find a location. I have some people I could ask about the Red Hand, I'm sure.
So what else have you been up to? I heard about a couple more soldiers lost. How are you holding up? I know you were close with them.
Yeah. I'm making sure that their families are taken care of as best as possible. Jimmy is doing better every day. I don't know if you remember Jimmy, but Dominic takes from his back pocket a stuffed giraffe. I was going to go see Judy and Lizzie this afternoon. See how the weather holds.
Yeah, well,
good work on the Silk Noir information. Do I know anything about the Red Hand?
You would know a little bit about them. They smuggle artifacts. They oftentimes will be in places after phenomena happens. They seem to just be there sometimes.
Okay.
But they're more known for smuggling rare artifacts and antiques.
Right.
And amongst other things, too. But they're a pretty rough group, and people that cross them, it doesn't always end well.
Okay. I think our paths are going to be crossing soon. All right. Well, I'll take a paper.
Is that all you need?
He looks at you.
Maybe, you know, make sure the Sunday funnies are in the paper before you hand it to me.
All right. Well, I've given you other names, Sarso. They'll give you the good funnies, too. So I feel a little weird.
Oh, I understand. Here's a little extra.
He reaches down behind his newsstand. He pulls up a paper, and you can see it's raised a little bit. And as he slides it across, you can hear underneath just something, certainly metal, a metal container, as he slides it over to you.
I know no one needs to know about this, right?
Yeah. Secret safe with me.
Okay. Fantastic.
He looks a little ashamed as he says that, but he's a man of his word. You know that.
There's a lot of guilt where Dom, you know, sees what he's doing to a friend, but he can't stop right now.
As you stand there, Dom, you hear the dog start to bark as the sound of light footsteps approach you, and you hear a voice call to you. Sergeant Kaminsky.
Do I recognize the voice?
You do not recognize this voice. You see this mid-height woman, long dark hair is up. She's holding a walking stick, and she looks toward you. A word in private, if you could.
Sure. Step away from the newsstand. Give him a nod. I pocket my newspaper carefully.
She steps to the side with you. I was sent here by a mutual acquaintance. Alexandria Whitman, your lightkeeper?
Yes.
This is about your next assignment.
All right. And where do you figure into this? Why is it you're coming to me?
Oh, I recently retired from being an investigator, much like yourself. I have taken on a role as, you could say, a lightkeeper in training. And she smiles when she says that. But Alex would like you to be at the chapter house by noon, if possible. The rest of your circle will be waiting for you there.
Excellent. I will be there. I'm assuming you'll be there as well?
Of course.
Interesting. I try to play back in my head how long she would have been standing there watching me at the newspaper stand.
You would gather that it wasn't very long. So you would gather that, yeah, you're okay. She didn't notice anything.
All right. Puts me at ease.
She nods to Dom and she turns around, walks away back onto the streets. And from there, we're going to jump forward in time a few hours later as we arrive at the Circle House in the Harborfront District. The room itself is quiet. Beyond the ticking clock that rests upon the north-facing wall, you would see Eleanor sitting in a chair reading through notes, Tala sitting at a table sipping a cup of freshly made tea. And as the clock ticks and ticks, the hour hand slipping over to noon, Alex enters the room to greet you, and next to her, another figure. Jake, could you describe to the group what they see?
You guys see a taller fella, maybe around 6 foot. He's got a kind of dark blue suit jacket on, and it's got some swirly patterns that kind of adorn it. Underneath that, he's wearing a black button-down shirt. He's got some fingerless leather gloves on, and he's got some messy brown hair, some 5 o'clock shadow, and around his left eye, there is a scar that kind of looks as though veins or like branches come out from his eye.
Cool.
As Alex and this figure enters, you see Alex motion them to go and sit, joining the rest of the group. As you see in her hand, she's carrying this rectangular wooden box with a handle. She places it down upon the table that sits in the center of the room here, her eyes shifting up to look at Arthur, Dominic, and Victor. Thank you all for gathering on such short notice. I hope you all have had time to recover after your last assignment. I would have liked you all to have had more time to rest and recover, but time is of the essence. You see she opens the box, unlatching the locks, revealing this object inside. You see an old communication radio, something that would have been used in the war, but it's unique in the sense that there are tubes coming out the top of it. And at the end of these tubes are syringes. Looking closely, you would see what appears to be residual liquid within the tube's crimson in color.
It seems there may be some loose ends that we've overlooked during the last assignment, and I'm afraid that may have led to what I am about to share with you all.
Alex's eyes appear to gloss over for a moment, but she steels herself and continues.
Earlier this morning, it was brought to my attention that a body was found at the pier. A couple of fishermen saw something bobbing up against one of the concrete pillars and brought it in. Apparently, there were strange markings, abnormal puncture wounds, and a familiar disfiguration. Officer Navarro of the OUP contacted me this morning and informed me.
She pauses, withholding a piece of information that may already be realized by some of you.
The body that was found was one of our own, member of your circle.
And as she says this, she takes the device out of the box and begins setting it up on the table. She looks towards the figure that came into the room with her.
Scott here is familiar with this device and helped me complete the procedure. It should give us some insight into what happened during the last 10 to 20 minutes of Marvin's life. Once we play it, it can never be heard again. That is why I waited for you all to arrive.
Scott just stands at the back of the room, kind of leaning up against the wall, one foot on the wall, arms crossed, with a toothpick in his mouth. Just kind of knowing that they have the more personal connection, will kind of stand back.
What the?
Oh my god!
Dom is speechless. He's just shocked. We need to know more.
Sorry, you are saying they died?
I'm afraid so, yes.
What?
Do we know how?
This device should tell us. It'll give us some insight into how.
I think I'd shoot a acquisitive look to Eleanor. Just almost like a confused look.
As you look over at her, she is in just as much shock as everyone else in this room. She's sitting up, looking towards Alex, towards the three of you, eyes wide. Alex starts twisting the dials upon this strange radio as whirs and static and whispers and a tinny tone start to play from it.
Now make sure you don't finish the process until you're ready to do it.
She looks to the rest of the group. Are we ready?
Of course not, but let's go.
I am with Dominic. Play it.
I suppose there's only one thing to do.
As the static fades into the sound of waves crashing against the docks and seagulls cawing overhead, there is a sound of fishermen moving crates from the day on to carts pulling them along the pier. You hear this rhythmic thud of wheels as they roll against the uneven wood on the pier. You hear a small crowd talking until it disperses, footsteps fading in the distance, but then there's another set of footsteps that are approaching as a voice calls out,
"You've got to touch, Marv. Those tinksters of yours are flying off the shelves faster than gossip in a small town, I tell you what."
Oh, they always sold themselves. They've never been hard. They're kind of fun to sell, actually.
You do a hell of a job. I mean, I need to get some pointers from you. You know, hey, I know it's been a bit, but, you know, you want to catch up, have a little drink tonight? I mean, I feel like we haven't talked in ages.
I mean, I'm not doing anything. I've sold what I can for the day, and it'd be nice to just sit down and chat for a bit.
I feel like you told me one time you really enjoy, what is it, the drink? Is it Rocky? Is that what it's called?
Oh, that's the one, yeah. It's got, like, that little bit of licorice flavor.
Yeah. I picked some up earlier, and I was thinking about you, and I was like, oh, man, I gotta go catch up with Marv, you know? And I figured I wanted to come down here and catch up.
Did you know it's best over, like, a little bit of cold water? Here, just take a swig of the cold water and then, like, throw back a swig of the Rocky. It tastes great that way.
He takes the water, you kind of hear it moving, and takes a gulp, then a sip of the Rocky.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
Don't drink all of it. I'll have one, too.
Oh, yeah, come on. Yeah.
Here, and he hands over the flask to you for you to have a sip.
Oh, it tastes as good as I remember.
It's pretty good stuff. Whatever ended up happening over at the Arum Lumina factories over there, I mean, I heard it ended up just being like a gas explosion or something, and one of the buildings burned down. Is that's what I heard?
Oh, I think the official declaration was it was a Prosecco puzzle party, but I think that's just like terms for a drug deal or something.
Okay, I mean, I think I've heard of that, a Prosecco puzzle party. Yeah, okay.
He's nodding up and down to that, kind of smirking.
I honestly don't think it was too much on the up and up. It was like all a bit of a cover up.
I mean, if the Sentinels were involved, I mean, what can we expect? You know, they're always trying to hide stuff, you know, people and their secrets. Am I right, Marv?
Always.
He takes a flask back from Marvin, takes another sip, gives Marv a little playful punch in the arm. You and I, though, Marv, we're open books, pals, the Harbor Front duo. And then he takes a sip. Well, we can't forget Mr. Flask here, you know, so maybe the Harbor Front trio.
Oh, that's getting to be a party, isn't it? Is it good to associate with, like, a flask as your, like, trio member?
That's true. I mean, maybe not. That might say something about me. Yeah, no, I like the Harbor Front duo. It sounds better. It's got a nicer ring to it.
Yeah, it was kind of fun.
So, Marvin, I've been meaning to ask you about your tinctures. I've never had the pleasure of trying one, but a buddy of mine at the paper had one once and said it was amazing. I'm curious, though, how you make them? I mean, seems like a delicate process, you know? Do you have, like, a special recipe or, like, a little something, you know, you add for those effects? I mean, you're obviously doing something, right?
Why do you think it's me? I told you before, it's the Great Wellness Weaver.
Oh, all right. Interesting. I just thought it was a trade secret or something. Makes sense, though. I mean, it's your thing. It's the Wellness Weaver. I get it. He goes over and grabs a couple pebbles, and you start to hear tossing into the water, the impact rippling out. Marvin, I wanted to mention, I know you were in the Emergence War, and I heard about some soldiers made me think of you. Apparently, they were... something strange got them.
What?
Yeah. I mean, being a reporter and all, I hear a lot of things. You know, I heard that whatever attacked him, and he gets in close, and you catch there's an acrid scent on his breath. But he leans in close, gets real close to Marvin. I heard that whatever attacked him stole their faces, and that's crazy, don't you think?
Yeah, that would be crazy if it were true. Where are you getting these, like, news stories from? Your sources are getting worse, Charlie. Maybe it's the day drinking.
It could be, you know. I've been doing a lot of thinking. Maybe I should give it up, but I don't know. Makes you feel good, makes you feel better, stronger, you know, but...
You're acting a bit strange. Are you sure you're feeling okay? Why don't you just take it easy on the Rocky? I know it hit hard.
I don't know. I just been thinking a lot about, you know... I'm sorry to bring that story. I don't know if I ever told you this, Ma, but I lost a lot of good friends and family in the war, too. At this point, he lights a cigarette.
Was it like your parents or something? I feel like a lot of us got left behind and abandoned because of that.
Yeah. My parents... my brothers and sisters, my cousins, my second cousins. I mean, a lot of them died.
That's awful.
Do you feel like a deep sense of loss like I do? I mean, something, you know, important taken from you?
Not because of the war, really. But just, like, we're not there for one another so many times.
Mm. Yeah.
So many people died alone.
Yeah, isn't that funny? As he says this, Marvin, you start to feel a little off kilter. The world around a little brighter than normal. Your hands wispy, a glow about them. Charlie walks over.
You feeling all right, Marv? You're looking a little paler than usual.
I'm okay. I just need to stand up. It's all right. I think it hit me too.
As Marvin stands up, you stumble forward. And as you do, Charlie walks a little closer.
Don't try and get up. You won't feel anything here shortly.
And you hear the sound of behind you as Charlie grabs Marvin by the throat and begins carrying him over towards the water and holds Marvin up. As he does that, his other hand reaches and you would hear the sound of clothing being moved around and the sound of a metal piece being grabbed as he just squeezes tighter on Marvin.
I always had an inkling that you had the amulet, Marvin. I can feel it on you.
Am I able to grab it out of his hand?
You can attempt to. We'll say, go ahead and make a hide roll.
I'll try to use some drive on this. I'll roll four dice. The best I got was a four.
As you hold on, you feel the hand squeezing tighter around Marvin's throat. As he pulls the amulet back, the nails elongate, puncturing in further, and then plunging Marvin into the icy waters of the pier. And from the water, the bubbles, you just see kind of the face shifting, and the other hand reaches in the water and just drags across Marvin's face as he holds him down there.
As I'm kind of struggling in that, can I actually try to, like, break off my finger into the amulet?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Like, through the mouth of it?
Yeah, go ahead and make a strike for me in these final moments as you're held under the water.
That would be a one.
You go to try and break off one of your fingers into the amulet, and the other hand smacks it away and just plunges it into Marvin's back and just pushes in further and further and further. And the water just starts to fill up Marvin's lungs. Those last moments, as the light fades, you feel yourself just fading away. And as that happens, we see Alex flip the switch, turning the machine off.
Do we all know Charlie?
I do not know. Never heard of him, never. No, nothing. I'm sorry, I'm still quite new to the group. I don't know too much about you all and who you talk to and who he talked to.
Well, we know it's a newspaper, right? He's a reporter, he was saying.
Yeah, do we know any other physical descriptions from the tape? I got lost in listening to what happened.
Alex speaks up. It sounds, with the waves, it sounds, I'm guessing, close to the water. I mean, that's where they found their body. Is there more information that I'm missing here? I think we need to be upfront with one another, or someone else may suffer the same fate as Marvin.
Something about this doesn't add up to me. Is Marvin really dead?
The body's in the other room.
This machine wouldn't work if he wasn't.
Hope drains from his face.
Why did he want the amulet? I am confused. Does anybody know exactly what the amulet did? I mean, I never got too close to Marvin. I was not able to talk to them about it. How do we know that this character isn't coming for any one of us? Maybe they got the amulet and now they are coming for the rest of us.
What amulet?
You did not know about the amulet?
I had no idea about this amulet.
Dominic stands up. Marvin discovered a relic in a collapsed bunker on or near an obelisk. I can't remember now.
You're talking about, like, during the war?
Yeah.
And you said the obelisk. Do you know what it was built for? Do you know who created it?
We don't know that stuff.
What exactly did it do?
It had healing properties that Marvin didn't really talk about. There were, you know, war-stricken locals that he helped out, and some of our people over there, he helped out for sure. He saved lives.
What I don't understand is that, say if you are someone who wants the amulet, it holds great power and you want it, so you go to take it. Why drown them into the water? Why not just knock them out and take it? Why go to the lengths of murdering them?
I really enjoy about you that you don't understand evil, and I hope that never changes.
Well, if I may, there's also the more simple solution past evil. If we can be honest, I think we know he was a bit obsessive about it, and with someone obsessive about holding on to something, if you keep them around, they're not exactly ever going to go away if they don't have it.
You all knew that they had this amulet? I take it now, from what I'm gathering?
Yeah, I did not know of its importance, but, I mean, I guess in hindsight, they hid it. I guess it was obvious that there's something going on with it, but...
Alex, do you remember when I came here with Marvin originally, and I told you you're someone that could really be a benefit to the Circle and kind of conducted those introductions?
Yes, I remember.
Yes, well... I knew he had the amulet as at that point. We were conducting some research on it to see what else we could find out about. I think probably from that point on, I think a large reason why he stayed in the Circle as well was because he didn't want me to tell you. And the way in which he agreed to stay in the Circle was that, well, I wouldn't tell you. You know, until we had a better understanding of things. Because as we know, with artifacts such as this, we confiscate them for studies exclusively, and they wouldn't have liked that to be taken away.
I understand the...
Listen, I'm not telling you it was the best decision in the world. Not defending it there.
No, not at all. I understand what you're saying. I just...
It's messy.
Yes, it is certainly messy. Well, I think we need to figure out what we need to do next, because this is obviously a problem. If this relic that Marvin had upon them was significant, well, they obviously wanted it for a reason. What if it took it from them?
I just feel like there was a motive that we are missing. There could have been witnesses. There must have been a clear reason why they wanted to get Marvin out of the picture. Enough to do it in almost plain sight. I don't know. I don't know Marvin as well as you, Dominic. I feel like you should take the lead on this. If you think it was just out of evil, then I believe you.
No, you're right. It was a deliberate thing. You know what? Maybe you're right. Maybe I will take point. We need to find out who this Charlie is or was.
I think whoever Charlie is probably dead. And then this is pretending to be Charlie. Maybe another avenue might even be, if Charlie is dead, then we have two bodies.
Well, how does Marvin know Charlie? They had a pre-established relationship, did they not? Did I hear that correctly?
I mean, they talked like friends at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
What if, like, the last assignment we did, this is someone who is wearing someone else's face? Maybe this Charlie person, they have been replaced, and I don't know, just Marvin seems so comfortable.
If he was that comfortable, then we're dealing with something a bit more intelligent than the average phenomenon. Seems like more than just impersonating him, it was able to get his personality, not just the face.
We need some kind of safeguard going forward. So if we get separated and we come back, we need a way to confirm that we are who we say we are. Some sort of code word that confirms that I am who I am and you are who you are.
Can you guarantee everyone in the room right now is who they say they are?
Would a bleed detector pick up on that? There has to be a way of testing.
That's a good point. You guys see real quick the veins underneath the left eye of Scott begin to kind of look as though underneath the skin they're giving off a bit of light. And I would like to use my mind reader ability and kind of open up my mind and see if there's anyone in the room whose mind I cannot hear, as if they are not a person.
Oh. Who are you, Scott? Who are you?
I do normally have to make a read roll for that. I don't know if you want me to do that, but...
Yeah. You can go ahead and make a read roll for it. Yeah, do it up.
That sounds cool.
That's something you mentioned in the after hours, not right now.
One of these is gilded, so I'm rolling two die, one's gilded. Let's see. I got a 6.
Dope.
So on top of surface thoughts, I could probe deeper into someone if I wanted.
Okay.
Do it.
All right, so as you expand your mind out, this almost sixth sense coming from you, you would gather surface thoughts from Alex. They would be trying to figure out what newspaper could Charlie work for. That's what she's thinking about. Those are her surface thoughts right now. A possible place to go look. Talyun, she would just be thinking about the delicious tea she's enjoying right now.
She's unaffected by everything.
Yeah.
It's rude.
Eleanor, in her mind, you would gather just her worry for the rest of the group, particularly thinking about Arthur.
Oh.
What are y'all's surface thoughts that Scott gets?
Mine are, how am I going to trick the rest of the group into believing who I am?
No, it's, my surface thoughts are, part of it's like, who is this guy? Who is this new person kind of checking us all out? And it's awkward for one person to be killed and another one to show up. But it's also, what was the motive? Just a lot of like, who was Marvin? Who were they talking to? Who is this Charlie? Is Charlie alive? Are they who they said they were? Or were they pretending to be Charlie? Just a lot of like racing thoughts about this whole situation.
Dominic is thinking about times on the front when he saw Marvin peddling with letters in hand, and how it would have been the happiest, you know, time that week, and Marvin was responsible for it. How Marvin helped him get through that horrible experience, and how he supported him after they came back from the war. Yeah, he's also thinking about newspapers.
I think Arthur's mind goes to kind of the sad irony that someone who heals could heal everyone else other than themselves when it came down to it. And then his mind kind of wanders and he looks to Eleanor and starts thinking if these creatures can enjoy a cup of coffee or not. As he just kind of continues to glance her way.
Does Scott probe deeper with anybody?
I do not.
Okay.
Everyone here is who they say they are. At least as far as I know. I don't know you all too well. I won't do that again without consent.
I don't want to be rude, but do you mind just kind of going into who you are?
I'm Scott Grayson. Been with Candela for about 2 years now.
And did you know Marvin at all, or?
Not at all, but they needed somebody to come help you. So I'm your guy. Known Alexandria for a while. She kind of brought me in here.
You ever serve Grayson?
No. I bartend, not a server, though.
Do you have any sort of... Like I said, I'm kind of new to Candela.
Oh, I can tell.
Do you have any inkling of what Charlie could be or what the amulet is and I don't know, any details about obelisks?
Oh, I don't know anything about all that. Seems like you all knew him a bit better than I did, so...
And Dom, you said you found it with him at the obelisk, but you also do not know exactly, how do I say, the finer details of why the obelisk was there and who created it.
We didn't ask a lot of questions. We saw a lot of things over there. We haven't even gotten into it between Marvin's stories and mine. We don't talk about it a lot, but... They were prone to going off by themselves quite a bit. They were never afraid of anything. And they came back all proud of this, and secretive. But not to me. I don't know. Marvin didn't mind sharing with me. But there was a bunker. The bunker was pretty much split in half. It was a huge gaping hole in the ground. That's the easiest way for them to get into a bunker. And it was down that crevasse that there was an obelisk.
Finders keepers then, huh?
Yeah. He did so much good with that. Imagine if it was just locked in a box or just, you know, behind glass.
We have talked about this amulet doing good, but do we know if it's capable of doing bad?
Everything is when wielded by the right person.
That's right. And it was doing good with the right person.
Okay, so what are our next steps? Where do we go from here?
Well, I think that could be good to check the docks. There are a few papers here in the city. The Nevermore Observer is one. The Paradox Gazette is another.
I'm assuming Arthur's writing everything down. He's always got that notebook.
The Nevermore Observer is more of a respected neutral paper, but the Paradox Gazette is kind of a, how do you say, it's a little bit of a exaggerated paper, some of the stories.
Some of it is stuff that people in our organization can decipher a bit more than the average reader, from what I've seen.
Indeed. So, I mean, I think there are a couple options to see what information you can glean about this Charlie individual. And figure out exactly what this amulet is all about and why it is so important.
Can we use this machine anymore? We can't, like, rewind it further? So 5 minutes before that?
No. It's done.
We actually stretched its typical capabilities with that.
Damn it.
I mean, it sounds as if the most dramatic one is probably the best place to start.
I would say if he works for the Paradox, then he's probably got a bit better of a chance of running into a phenomenon. Accidentally stumbling into it.
Just an observation. You know, I just keep going back to that picture that was on Liz's wall in her closet. I believe I'm next. All of us shared that secret. I think that might be the common thread. I could be wrong, and I pray I am.
I don't think it's going to get any better with us sitting here. Say, we get a move on, see what we can see, play it from there. That's kind of what we always do. Now it seems in poor taste to say it's worked out well so far, but every time we've been together, it's worked out okay.
Listen, I know it's gonna hurt, but I think you guys have a body to inspect before we leave here.
Yeah, I mean, that seems fitting enough. Which door is it through?
As Scott says this, Alex, like, looks over at Scott and just puts her hand up to her temple. All right, it's this way. And she walks to the door to the left side of the chapter house here, but she stops at the door before she lets you all in.
The only way we were able to extract that information from Marvin was through exsanguination.
Yeah,
I figured.
All right. So she opens the door and you see there's a blanket over them, but you see Marvin's body with the blanket over. They are completely covered right now. She would walk over and just stand there, and she would let you all decide if you want to do it or no.
Dominic is going to march over and take the sheet and pull it down to the shoulders. I need to see if there's a face at all.
As you pull the sheet down, you see the hair where the hairline meets the face. But there is no face. It is gone. It almost looks like from the blood being removed from the body. It's even more disturbing to see.
I'm really sorry. They briefed me that he's not the first one that you've seen like this. I'll let you guys have your moment.
I will go ahead and pull a handkerchief out, put it kind of over my nose as I walk up. Alex, what did they say the main point of experiment was from?
Alex goes over and you can see around Marvin's neck. It looks like it was crushed. The body is certainly waterlogged a little bit. It looks like a combination of a few things. Primarily drowned, and there are puncture wounds in the back as well that certainly cause a substantial amount of damage. So a combination of the two. And you would see too, like a slash mark across one of Marvin's hands. And one of the fingers kind of is broken a bit as well. It looks like they were certainly trying to do something while they were being held.
Alex, could I borrow a glove, please?
Of course. She goes over and opens up a drawer, pulling out a pair and handing it to Arthur.
I'll put them on, and I want to take a closer look at the puncture wounds. See if there's anything I can glean from that.
Yeah, go ahead and make a focus roll for me. I would say, as long as you don't make a failure, nothing will happen, but it is a low stakes, but I will say on a failure, there is a possibility of taking a mark.
A five.
Okay. As you look at the puncture wound, it looks like not only was it an impact causing physical damage, but it appears that there was certainly bleed pumped into Marvin's system. You would also notice that there's almost, it's really strange, this film across the face where it was as well, but certainly a lot of physical and bleed was caused to their body.
You know, when I said I want to take lead on this, Arthur, I think you just make the decisions right now, okay?
Sounds good. Do you want to say your respects and wait outside while I finish up?
Yeah. Thanks, Arthur.
Of course. And then I'll take off the gloves, drop them in the dispose, and I'll kind of pull Alex aside and just kind of go over everything again with the recount.
Yeah, she would give you the information that she had. She's obviously a little distraught as well. Seeing one of your investigators dead is never easy, but yeah, she shares what she can with you. And she eventually walks to give Dom some space too in here. As they do, Dom, is there any last moments here before you join the rest of the group?
Marvin, you little shit. I can't believe the way you trusted that Charlie guy. I can't explain it. It's really nagging at me. But Marvin, we're gonna have to get that amulet back. That's the other thing I'm disappointed in you about. Do you know how many bodies I've had this sort of conversation with? I always thought I'd go first. And you'd be telling me this sort of thing. I guess I know where the thing will be. I'm the last one with a face left. One way or another, I'll see you soon, Marvin. And he covers up Marvin again, respectfully, making sure all the corners are exactly perfect. Before I leave the lab, I'm going to go into my new newspaper. I'm going to check off another snuff.
Okay, that's three. So as you take your bump, stepping out with the rest of the group, as you all reconvene, Alex stepping away, going back to the body, leaving you all there, where would you all like to head to next, as you have a few different threads to follow?
I don't know. What are you guys thinking? I'm thinking maybe We go to the scene of the murder, perhaps? But I want to hear what everybody else is thinking.
Not a bad place to start.
I mean, do we know exactly where that is? Because it sounded like there was a place of the murder and then there was a place of the body. That those might have been two separate places. Unless Alex has an idea of where it took place?
She would eventually rejoin the group.
Yes, I think based on just information from Officer Navarro, wasn't too far from where Marvin would normally set up when they would sell their tinctures on the pier there.
I say we do that.
I'm in, yeah. The Dom's a little distant.
I'm following you all.
So as you all head not a very long distance from the chapter house here in the Harborfront District.
Did we arrive in like a carriage or do we walk there? Or?
Yeah, you would walk there. It's not too far because the chapter house is in the Harborfront District. So it wouldn't be but you could absolutely take a carriage if you all wanted to, because if you're heading somewhere else potentially after, then that would make sense.
Wouldn't want to get your pretty shoes dirty.
They're plenty dirty already. And I'll pull out a pack of cigarettes, flip it open, and kind of push one up so it's sticking out a bit. Captain?
Oh, no thanks. I'm living it clean.
All right, suit yourself. Anybody else?
Yeah, I'll get in there.
Yeah, I'll pass a couple smokes out, pull out my lighter, light mine, and light the other two as we walk.
What can I ask you, how does it feel to be kind of like the new guy? I mean, you are not necessarily the new guy because you are, 2 years into Candela, but...
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you're newer than me.
Yeah, I don't know if you plan on staying long, but...
Well, I gotta be honest. I've always been part of a circle from the beginning. I've never really joined one up midway, so, different experience, but I've worked with a few different folks. Can't say I've worked with any of you, so it'll be a fun time. Sorry about your friend, but hopefully I can help.
It is weird to say, but I'm a little bit luckier than some of the other circle members here. I did not quite know Marvin as well, so it's a little less painful for me than maybe Dominic. But still painful all the same, if that makes sense. I've been surrounded by loss a lot recently, so... It's weird, but I guess you start to get used to it.
Yeah, kid, it just keeps getting weirder.
Have you ever been with the circle this big? I mean, I don't know what the general size of circles are, but I don't know. I feel like four. It would have been five. It's pretty large.
It's pretty average, honestly. Four. They wouldn't have called me in if your friend didn't. Happy to be here all the same.
Can I ask, too, how you found the Candela? For me, I was kind of picked up by the group. I did not really know that Candela existed, but I'm curious how you got your start.
Sounds like we kind of have similar stories then. My first encounter with the phenomenon, I was getting attacked. Alex stepped in, and that's how I know her. Got into Candela.
Yeah, my story is... kind of crazy. I was framed for murder, and then we fought a giant, nightmare crawler. We burned a building down. I don't know if that's technically considered arson, because we intentionally burned the building down, but it was to take down a spider creature, a nightmare crawler, It was a nightmare crawler, but I want to call it spider, because it was a big spider.
Look, you can only call it what you know. I get it, but...
Nightmare Crawler is a lot more, syllables, so I just say spider. It's two, so spider, nightmare, crawler.
Definitely easier to say.
Yeah, so we killed the spider. I think we killed the spider. Thinking back on it, I did not see the spider die, but it was in the burning building and it fell down, so... the spider is totally dead, but that is beside the point. That is kind of how I got my start, and, I've been with them since then.
There were a lot of eggs.
Yeah, there were a lot of eggs. Marvin actually pulled a really good trick. They distracted the cops while Dominic here came over. You wouldn't believe the strength this man has. I was in cuffs and this guy came over, towering over me. And then with all this brute strength and power, he just ripped the cuffs off. I thought my arm was going to break. I mean, you look at me and I've got these, like, little bird arms.
Oh, he definitely looks like he could have broken you. I believe it. This guy looks huge.
I think he could break any man, honestly, and I'm surprised he did not, but...
Don't let him fool you, Scott. Victor is right behind me in every dangerous situation.
I don't doubt it.
He makes a very competent backup.
This is more kind of unintentional. I don't mean to always be in battle. My mind just thinks and I do. Or I should say I don't think, I kind of just do.
Hey, kid, you're rambling, all right? Don't doubt yourself as much. You got this.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, that's how I got my start. It was kind of a crazy day.
Oh, trust me, I get it. You're gonna have a lot of them.
You would have liked Marvin, no. They were nice, and then they were cunning.
Seemed like a good one.
They made great healing tinctures. It seemed like they knew a lot of people. That's why it makes this so hard.
You know, come to think of it, I did hear about a factory burning down a couple weeks ago. That was you guys then, all right?
Yeah, that was my old job. I don't really go there anymore because, you know, obviously there was that incident.
We have a lot in common.
You worked at the factory, Scott?
Oh, no. No, but I'm not welcome at my old job anymore, either.
And where was that?
I did a lot of bartending down in the Crimson Land.
Oh, my sister lives in the Crimson Land.
Oh, where at?
She kind of lives in, like, this little quaint apartment, kind of close to where you kind of find, like, a lot of gambling dens, kind of near that area. It's not as safe, but it's cheap.
She's probably down close to the White Rabbit, then.
I try to visit when I can, but, it's easy to lose money, so I try not to go too much, but, you know.
Oh, trust me, I've seen many dudes looking like you coming in there and losing a buck.
Yeah, I gambled once and I stopped, you know. It's not for me. Not very lucky.
Hey, well, look, you're with this company, you can't be lucky, can you?
Yeah, I guess not.
Depends on how you look at it, I guess. Maybe we're the lucky ones. All these other people who don't know any of this is going on?
Yeah, I missed that.
You're telling me.
Pete, just to circle back there, Victor, you remember we had the conversation about having no money? I set you up with the TA thing so you could make money. Are you telling me you lost all of it? Like, as it came in? Is that why you still have no money?
No, okay, so I gambled once and I lost money. It wasn't, I mean, some of it was TA money at the time. But that was the only time, and then after that, I mean, most of my money go to my sister and to rent, and he went to Philip. Obviously, it does not go there anymore.
Look, don't give the kid a hard time. What are you, OUP?
Excuse me?
I said, don't give the kid a hard time. What are you, OUP? Sorry, I'm making a joke.
Sure. Something like that.
No, he knows what he's doing.
Good, good. Yeah, I mean, you seem like you're all pretty smart, so...
Yeah, wicked smart.
Arriving near the pier, you see there's a heavy fog that hangs low over the water, adding this eerie feeling as you all approach the scene where your circle member's life was taken. There's a dim glow of lantern lights piercing through the mist here, casting long shadows over the weathered wooded planks of the pier. It becomes evident that there was a sign of struggle here. You see small pieces of fabric embedded in the worn pier that leads closer to the edge, where the pier drops into the icy cold waters of the bay. Seeing this as you approach, what are you all doing as you try to glean additional information beyond what Alex has presented to you?
I think I'm going to be looking for if there are any people there that seem to, you know, typically kind of hang around that area. You know, common goers, stalls.
Yeah, absolutely. You do see, as you all approach the spot there, you kind of see this older, grizzled fisherman kind of looking over at your group. You know, he's like sipping on a flask or whatever. He's trying to be inconspicuous, but doing a terrible job at it. As you kind of see him, he looks away, walking back and forth on the pier, trying to not gain any attention.
I'll point over towards his way, kind of thumb over there, turn to the rest of the group and be like, I think he is being literally as conspicuous as possible. If anybody wants to talk to them, specifically with me.
I am not very good at interrogating, but I want to get better, so I can try.
I'll join you, Arthur.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Dom. Get him.
I think Dom's looking for a fight right now. He's upset.
Dom and Arthur, you approach this fisherman here. You see he's got like waders on and a heavy jacket. He's got his hood on, but as you approach, he's like,
yeah.
He just sips on his drink.
What do you want?
I'll kind of flip open my pack of cigs and hold one out to him, not saying anything.
He looks around.
Are you sentinels or?
Sentinels.
Boy, I'm not. I've been busted a couple times for drinking out here, so.
And he grabs one of the cigarettes.
You got a light?
Oh, yes, yes. And I'll go ahead. I'll pop one in my mouth, too. I'll motion to Dom if he wants one first.
Dom will wave it off. No, I like to keep things clean, you know.
I'll whip out a little lighter, light both his and I's, and turn to him and say, how often do you hang out here, friend?
Well, I'm here most days. I don't really go out on the water anymore, but is everything all right?
Everything's great. You just seemed like you had something on your mind, and people tell me I'm a good listener, so I wanted to stop by. See anything weird?
As you're having this conversation with him, he seems a little skittish, for sure. Go ahead and make a sway roll, low stakes. He seems a little suspicious, jittery, nervous.
Okay, I'll do one drive on it, so it'll be one gilded, one normal. That's a 6 on the gilded, so never mind. I'll take it back.
Nice.
Ooh, nice, nice, nice. Get that drive right back.
I was thinking of helping, but I only have a 1 drive in cunning.
Oh, boy.
I think to kind of ease some of his caution, I'll literally take the drink out of his hand and take a sip and hand it back. You're not going to be in trouble.
Oh, good. It's good stuff, huh?
It's the best.
Yep. Yeah, so I was out here last night. Having a drink, of course.
Naturally.
And, well, I honestly thought I was seeing things. I thought I had a bad bottle of booze, but, it's a little hard to explain. Over there, I was stacking some crates here, and, I saw someone getting attacked. But whatever was attacking him, it wasn't human. I mean...
You see at this point, he's reliving the moment as he continues.
I've heard stories from soldiers that work on the docks here about what happened in the war, and I just thought those are war stories, but seeing what I saw last night made me rethink what they said.
You would see kind of the shift in tone. There's certainly some regret.
I was going to intervene, but honestly, I hid like a coward behind some boxes.
I completely understand. It sounds like it was a very scary thing to have witnessed. I probably wouldn't have been one to jump in either, but maybe you can make it up on the tail end of it. Would you mind walking over with me and just kind of showing me what happened? Maybe we can spot something.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
He walks over with the two of you. As they head over, what is Victor and Scott doing as that conversation's happening?
I think as that conversation's happening, Scott is over on the pier where you said there's signs of a struggle, and I want to use a bleed detector to see if there's anything around the area on that fabric you mentioned, maybe.
Yeah, as you look into that space, go ahead and make a focus roll for me.
Okay. I have 1 in focus. I think I will use one of my intuition drives.
And I'll say it's not super high stakes. It's a pretty low stakes roll.
That's a 6 and a 5. So the 6.
Dang, hot dice
satisfying
tonight.
Satisfying dice sound too.
Ooh. Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Dang. Yeah, so as that conversation's happening over there, looking at that fabric, you can see there's pieces scattered about towards where it drops off. And as you look over, you see in the water, kind of attached to one of the wooden beams that holds up the pier, you would see a piece of like fabric flapping. It looks like a cravat. And Victor, you would know that Marvin wore a cravat.
Hey, that looked like something your friend might have worn?
Yeah, that's something that they actually wore quite a lot. I wish I had like a net on me. I'm not a very good swimmer. I mean, I don't want to say you're the new guy and all, but maybe you can...
Look, buddy, from what I've heard, you're the new guy. Sometimes you gotta get wet.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I thought I could do something there, but...
Yeah, I see. It's all right. You'll find your footing.
Okay, here I go.
And Victor will kind of take a few steps back and then, like, jog and cannonball, like, plug his nose as he jumps in.
Oh, shit. You're jumping full in? Oh,
I'm
my God.
I'm jumping into the water to go get that. Yeah, I'm jumping in.
Oh, my God. Okay. Yeah.
And Victor impresses Dominic once again.
Victor, yeah, so you just see Victor leaps into this icy cold water.
And let's all remember how thin and frail Victor is. That water hits you, and it is jarring as you into that water. And luckily, it's not crazy rapids. You do have to dive down a little bit into the water. So as you swim to collect it, Victor, you would notice on the wooden beam there, where the piece of the cravat is, you would see small little fish feeding on what looks like flecks of skin.
Oh, God.
Oh.
And you would also see etched in there an image, very jagged, but you would see an image of an obelisk, essentially. But why your eyes are drawn to that is those fish that are like feeding on like the skin that's remaining there. In that moment, you remember back to Marvin's finger being all messed up when you went in to see the body.
Mm-hmm.
In these last moments, it looks like he tried to give you all a message.
As you kind of come up, like, in that area, I'm like, whoa, kid, I gotta be honest, I didn't really think you were gonna do that. All right, hey, you're dedicated. All right, well, when you're ready to get up, and I'll put my hand out to, you know, help you.
Victor, like, tries to waddle over as best he can, and he gets over to your hand, and he goes,
it is very cold.
Yeah, let's get you out of there, buddy. Let's get you out of there. Come on, kid.
As you pull Victor up, Dom and Arthur arrive with this figure. As the three of them would see Victor just clothing sopping wet as you arrive here to join Victor and Scott.
This kid's crazy. He jumped in there.
Was the water a nice temperature, Victor?
Victor will hold up the cravat that he has and just go...
Cravat.
Hey, he got it.
That's Marvin's.
I will take off my suit jacket and kind of put it around Victor.
What did you see?
So, okay. There was,
Let's get him somewhere warm.
Warm would be nice.
I got a little hut. We can go over there. I might have some clothes you could throw on that are not frozen.
A drink would probably also help warm him up from the inside.
Yeah, here.
And he hands the bottle of booze to Victor.
Victor will take a swig from it really quickly. He's not really a big alcohol drinker, so immediately kind of like spits some of it out.
Well, it's not how you...
Oh, man. That's good stuff, man.
Hey, you probably just spit out like a couple dollars.
Yeah, that's like, you know, that's a day's work. Oh, God. Follow me.
You what offering?
I didn't know you were going to spit it out.
It's like if someone handed you a bandage and you just ripped it in half instead of using it. That's kind of like the same thing you just did.
Well, it's like if I ripped a quarter off of the bandaid. So it's not like in half, it's more like a corner of the bandaid.
Give me the bottle. You lost bottle privileges. You can't act like that.
Okay, what I saw... there was like a obelisk.
What?
I think Marvin might have like scratched. It wasn't like an actual obelisk, but it was like a drawing of an obelisk. I think that Marvin was trying to send a message or do something. I don't know, but there were fish like feeding on skin flakes and did I say obelisk? There was a drawing of an obelisk and.
So that's why his finger was in that condition. I should have known Marvin would be so clever. Obelisk, I know what that means.
What does it mean?
The obelisk is where he found his amulet.
Oh.
Which has been bringing all this unpleasantness to us.
Okay, so are you saying that if we destroy the obelisk, then like no more of these outbreaks, or?
I wish I could tell you one way or another. I have no idea about that aspect of it. But Marvin, they were telling us that they died for what they found at the obelisk, I think.
Well, look, if this is the last thing they did and knew that this thing was taking the amulet, kind of seems like maybe that's where it's going next or something.
Yeah. Whatever we do, we have to go there.
And you see this fisherman, he pulls out from his jacket a broken piece of a chain. It's a bronze chain. And he also hands, like, this waterlogged card to you as well.
When I saw the individual leaving after they did whatever they did to your friend, and I'm terribly sorry about that. And I don't know if this means anything, but...
And he holds out in his hand this broken part of chain. Dom, you would see that, and you knew about the amulet, so you would know that this is a piece of it.
Precisely where did you find this?
It was over where your friend, where...
And you can see he doesn't want to say it.
When your friend was, you know,
Their name was Marvin, and they were drowned.
Yeah. Again, I'm sorry. I found this over nearby.
And you see the chain, and then there's like a waterlogged business card.
Okay. What's on the business card?
So you would see on the business card the name Charlie Kipper, lead journalist, Paradox Gazette.
Well, I guess that our next trip is to the Gazette, and then we're going to take a road trip.
Before we go, do you mind if I ask, did you put in a report? I mean, you witnessed someone being murdered and you didn't jump in, which, I mean, that's one thing, but did you not tell anyone?
I mean, I came over here after to try and see if they were still all right. They were gone. I'm assuming the water pulled them out. I don't trust the Sentinels. I'm sorry. I didn't report anything.
Nor should you trust them. Totally fine.
And we appreciate you speaking so plainly with us. It'll do a lot of good. So take comfort in that.
Sorry about your friend, Marvin. Again, I hope you find the person that did that to him.
Nothing for you to be sorry about. You didn't do anything wrong, but thank you.
And he just takes another swig of his drink. And he finds some older clothes and gives them to Victor to change into. Really just simple slacks. They're too big, but he has a belt that you have to like just
tie.
tie to hold the pants up. It's pretty baggy on you, but it'll do the trick. It's a lot better than sopping wet.
It's adorable.
Maybe on the way we can stop for some clothes for you.
Oh, I don't have that kind of cash on me right now.
Kylie, I don't know if there's any mechanical money in this game. Like, I don't... How much?
You would have money. Yeah, you would absolutely be able to stop at a store and pick up some stuff.
Yeah, we could find something for you. I mean, they don't have to use too much fabric, so it should be cheap.
Oh, you're actually buying me clothes?
Yeah, of course. You know. Why not?
Victor looking to the rest of the group, trying to get closer. Maybe Bond goes,
I get a lot of this guy, huh?
Look, man, it's business expenses. You jumped in a freezing cold ocean, you know? Sorry, I really didn't think you were going to do that. But, yeah, we'll get you some new clothes. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't think about how else we could get it, so I kind of went into my mind palace and was like, jump.
That's good. Trust your gut. Especially in this business.
Well, you spared me the trouble. I appreciate it, Victor.
Yeah, I will say I probably will not be jumping into the water again, and not in the near future. Kind of a, that was like a one-time thing. Anyways, it was gold. Let's go.
As you leave the pier here, you stop, get Victor a new change, a new pair of pants and a shirt, and head to the Promenade District, where the Paradox Gazette is located.
Before we actually get there, like maybe when we stop for the clothes?
Yeah.
Is there anywhere I can find a physical copy of the Paradox Gazette?
Sure, yeah, you would be able to find a newsstand. Yeah, as you're heading into the Promenade District, you'd have to take a carriage to get there from Harborfront. It would take a bit of time to walk, but as you are heading out to hail a carriage, there would be newsstands scattered about where you could pick up...
Sorry.
All right, we'll pause for a second.
Bro, I didn't realize there were jump scares. Yeah. Jesus Christ,
this is
bro.
A horror podcast. This is a horror podcast.
Yeah, that scared the shit out of me.
Yeah, me too.
Sorry about that. He's a little bit jumpy.
Cool. Yeah, so easy enough.
Stop it. Just stop it, buddy. You good? You gonna pull through? Protecting me, bud? Thanks.
Yeah, so as you're hailing that carriage, before you head to the Promenade District, also to pick up some non-wet clothes for Victor, you would find some newsstands scattered about. But yeah, you could pick up a copy of the Paradox Gazette.
Great. I want to check the paper for the last article written by Charlie Kipper.
As you look at the paper, flipping through it, that name is not in there. And if you go back even a week, because it's a weekly paper that they release, they do have a few weeks of it, and there are no signs of Charlie Kipper.
As I come back to the carriage and I get in, I'll toss the newspapers out to the rest of them. No mention of this guy in the last couple weeks. He's been missing for a bit, it seems. Or at least he doesn't work there anymore.
Okay, so we're thinking, like, definitely replaced.
Sounds like it to me.
Is it, like, kill on sight?
Maybe it's like a punch on sight, a shoot on conversation.
Apprehend on sight?
Yeah. Detain, maybe.
Detain on sight. Question on sight.
Yeah, like mild violence on sight.
Mild violence on sight.
Yeah, let's play it by ear.
Maybe knife to the thigh, not the chest, kind of on sight.
Knife to...
You know. Yeah, write it down if you can, because I'm going to forget I said it. And I'm going to try to shoot him, so, you know.
Well, we need to find out how they react to us asking after a Charlie Kipper at the Gazette.
Okay, so among us, who stands out the least?
You talking about who's going to go in there?
Let's just all go in. Let's just do it.
So what's our game plan? Like, what kind of questions should we be asking? What should we not say?
As, I guess, a professor in this area of expertise and this newspaper that kind of touches on that, would I have really had any contact with them before this? Maybe like a name or a correspondent that I helped consult with?
Yeah, absolutely. You would know a reporter by the name of Brooke Willis. She's come to you for information because the Paradox Gazette, they kind of dig into the stuff that the rest of the world is trying to hide. They definitely are on the fringe. There is some truth in these kind of bizarre articles that they write. Brooke Willis, she would be someone that would have come to the Nevermore Institute of Technology and Engineering to speak with Arthur. So that could be a contact there.
I'll pass that on to the rest of their group. There is a Brooke Willis there that I've spoken with previously. I've helped on numerous papers and articles and such, so that might be an avenue to come in so we're not complete strangers.
Sounds good to me.
So, with a possible lead, you arrive outside of the Paradox Gazette. It's a pretty simple building, neoclassic architecture, two stories tall, certainly has a basement. The stairs lead up to the first floor of the building. You see warm lighting peeking through as it is getting into later afternoon, early evening. You can hear from the open windows on the second floor the sound of large printing machines working rapidly. The streets are definitely bustling with some activity. You see cars moving about, definitely a more affluent side of town, especially it being where the government, the predominance, does a lot of the governing of the city of Nevermore here. Entering into the building, you would see individuals hard at work. There would be a front desk with a receptionist sitting there. They're working on organizing paperwork, putting together files. You would see beyond that cubicles scattered about, just a faint chatter reverberating off the walls within this newsroom. The receptionist, they would look up at you.
Good afternoon. Is there anything we can help you with?
Oh, of course. Good afternoon. I was wondering if either Brooke Willis or Charlie Kipper were in today.
Let me check. Yes, Brooke is in. I could collect them for you. If you'd wait just here a moment.
Of course. Tell her it's Arthur Wright.
Perfect. All right. Thank you, Mr. Wright. I will let them know.
They step away for a moment, heading out back to collect Brooke. And after a couple minutes standing here, they arrive back. You see this young reporter, long blonde hair, her sleeves rolled up. She's got like a long sleeve dress shirt underneath, rolled up, a newsboy cap on her head, wearing this gray vest, matching slacks, cigarette dangling from her mouth. There's a little ashtray. She puts it out at the front desk and she walks up to Arthur, grabs him by the hands.
Arthur, how's it going?
Brooke, it's a pleasure as always. How are you?
I'm wonderful, Arthur. So I'm usually the one coming to see you. Yeah, what are you doing here?
Oh, I know. I thought I'd just take a house call. I've gotten tired of you knocking on my own office door.
I do a lot, don't I?
You know, more than most, but it's something I enjoy, so I always enjoy the conversations. Now, I was wondering if you could do me a favor. I know it's going to be a big ask if you're open for it.
Okay, yeah. Shoot. What you need?
We were looking to meet with the Charlie Kipper. He either works here or used to work here, and I was wondering, maybe if you didn't know where he was, we could talk to the editor about it.
Yeah, I know a Charlie Kipper. We didn't work directly together, but I know that name. Kind of a big reporter here for a while, yeah. If you want to follow me down the hallway, I can bring you to Mr. Ketch's office, and you can speak with him. He probably have a little bit more information than me. You know, I'm just a writer, so I don't have all that information. But yeah, I can absolutely bring you to him, if that works for you.
You're the best writer here, Brooke, of course. Thank you.
God, you're just...
She smacks Arthur in the arm.
So, no, I can't. That's... We gotta keep this professional. All right, yeah, follow me.
And she leads you all down the hallway. And she's like, you got quite the entourage, Arthur. Are these like... Well, I mean, I don't think he would be a bodyguard, but...
bodyguards? I mean, is that where you're at this point in your life?
You know, I'm a pretty important person, Brooke. But no, some of them friends and other consultants of so forth.
All right.
I know, nothing that interesting. I wish it was, though.
Gosh, now you're walking around like a politician.
She continues to lead you down the hallway. You eventually reach the editor's room where Mr. Ketch is. You see inside, sitting there, is this older gentleman, mid-50s. Definitely you can tell he works a lot. The room is pretty organized and well put together. You see articles framed on the wall as you enter in. Brooke knocks on the door, but doesn't even wait for him to respond. She just opens it up.
Hey, boss. Sorry to bother you. No, we got some deadlines to hit, but these folks here are looking for some info on Charlie Kipper. I thought you might be able to help them, and honestly, that's, you know, that's not part of my job. So I got some stuff to do. Have a great time. Arthur, I hope to see you around sometime. Maybe not work-related, if you know what I'm saying. All right, cool. So, yeah.
Whoa.
Huh? Hmm?
Well, you know where my office is if you ever need a conversation.
I do.
And she turns around, gives a wink, and then walks back to her cubicle as Mr. Ketch waves you all into his office.
Wow. Arthur, I didn't realize you knew such interesting women.
Stop staring, Dominic. It's not a good look. Don't stare.
As we walk into his office, have I ever seen this guy, Mr. Ketch, frequent the White Rabbit?
Yeah.
I might know that too.
As you look at him, it takes you both a beat, but it's his comb over that really like sells it. You've seen him with a toupee on, but he's got his little comb over trying to hide his balding head.
What is his drink of choice?
His drink of choice. He always orders a cosmopolitan.
Nice.
As you enter in, he puts some paperwork to the side.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. May I ask who you all are?
I will go ahead and outstretch my hand for a handshake with him first. First, I'm Professor Arthur Wright. Pleasure.
He shakes your hand. It is cold and clammy.
It's about what I expected. This is my friend Victor.
Victor.
Dominic.
Dominic.
And Scott.
Scott.
Ah, hey, Mr. Ketch.
Hey. Oh.
Old fashioned, right?
No. I'm a cosmopolitan man.
Ah. Sorry about that. Can't remember them all, you know.
Hey, it's all right. You still working at the White Rabbit, or?
Not so much these days. I'm in a different business, but yeah.
Well, you look good. Look happy.
Thanks. Appreciate that. You do too.
Doing my best.
Scott's doing well in his new position so far.
Oh, new position. Very good.
Just got tired of the long nights there, or?
Yeah, it was rough. A lot of rough nights.
That's understandable. I mean, it's quite the establishment, I will say.
Yes, it is.
Well, enough of that, though. So Charlie Kipper, yes. May I ask why you're interested in Mr. Kipper? Are they in trouble? Did they do anything wrong?
Well, to be honest with you, a friend of ours, we haven't been able to really get in contact with them, and I knew they were good friends of Charlie, so we were just checking up with them, maybe to see if they saw them around.
Oh, sure. Charlie actually has not worked here for about 4 months now. I unfortunately had to let him go. I shouldn't really say this, but I think he was starting to use Glimmer quite a bit. His demeanor changed, and his work started to get sloppy. He was an incredible reporter and had a knack for digging up information on stories that the Predominance and the Sentinels were trying to keep from the general public. But I think, in an effort to do so, got a little hooked on something, and his work diminished quite a bit. So I had to let him go, unfortunately.
Any of Mr. Kipper's notes would be very helpful for us. Is there anything like that around?
Sure, I can give you some of the articles he worked on.
What was he working on towards the end there?
There's been reports of a lot of strange deaths happening throughout Nevermore that there were always odd reasons given to why the individual was found dead, or they'd blame it on someone and things just weren't adding up. He was particularly interested in those afflicted by things that happened from the Emergence War. Those were kind of his story focuses. And was also very interested in the Arum Lumina mineral. But let me grab some of those articles for you.
Any notebooks would be especially helpful. Stuff he hasn't printed yet.
If this is something of concern, I can give you his address if you'd like to go speak with him yourself.
That would be great.
All right.
He grabs a piece of parchment paper and begins to write out Charlie's address.
He doesn't live too far from here, about 15 blocks away, where the Promenade, Crimson Lantern, and Obsidian Lane District intersect. He lives in those apartments there. He did well for himself. It's too bad that he got hooked on that stuff. It can really do a lot to people.
Oh yeah, I've seen stuff like that.
Mr. Ketch, I believe I speak for everyone when I say appreciate your cooperation in helping us get in contact with him.
Oh, of course. I'm sorry I couldn't provide more information. I hope this is helpful at least to get some answers. If there's anything I can help you with later.
What you've given us has been helpful so far. We'll have a look through these articles. We might find something, I hope. Just from the top of your head, anything strike you as especially out of the ordinary in your memories before you let him go?
I think the thing that was most jarring is he would be here late, and he became very frail towards the end before we let him go. It really broke my heart to do so, but I had people complaining, and, you know, his demeanor certainly changed towards the end.
How long was he using before he started showing those symptoms?
From what I know, he started using pretty heavily. I would assume a couple of months before we let him go. But there's so many nasty strains out there that, I mean, we've written some articles about it. And perhaps he got himself hooked on some of the stuff that I think may have been laced with something else. It's quite an epidemic going on here in Nevermore.
Mr. Ketch, can I ask you a very off-the-cuff question here?
Sure, absolutely.
How good of a reporter is Miss Willis?
She's pretty good.
Okay, great. I just wanted to make sure my consultations were being set to good use.
Oh, all right.
In exchange for as much help as you've provided for us today, feel free to use me as a resource, as Miss Willis has.
Oh, fantastic. I will absolutely keep that. Do you have a card or anything? Is it best to just reach you at the university?
University will be the easiest. I'm typically there after class for my office hours, and that's normally where I get caught up on mail and such, so that'd be the easiest way.
Perfect. All right. Well, I will definitely take you up on that, because I'm sure there's a lot we can talk about. Definitely some strange things happening in the city, and I would love to get an expert's opinion on some of them. So that would be wonderful.
My pleasure.
All right, well, we're on a bit of a deadline here, but...
Of course, Mr. Ketch, we don't want to keep you too much longer. I appreciate what you told us already.
So, as you head out of the newsroom here, leaving Mr. Ketch's office, walking out down the stairs, back into the city streets, what would y'all like to do?
Real brave of him to talk about Glimmer like that. I've seen him do it a couple times.
I take it with a grain of salt, as I'm sure you already have.
Yeah, of course. Always do.
So what, we're going to his personal apartment? Is that the plan?
Seems like the place to go to me.
Let's see if he's home then.
I mean, shouldn't we, like, prepare, like... I mean, like, shouldn't we prepare for a fight?
Here's the thing, kid. You stay prepared. Always prepared for a fight.
That was a pretty hard line, I'm not gonna lie.
Dominic opens his shirt and shows you his body armor. I'm prepared.
Yeah, Victor, we're kind of just in suits now at this point. You know, it's just, they're kind of the ones that do that, I think.
I open up my blue coat and there's a revolver on my hip.
Oh, of course. Yeah. So cool.
I have my 44.
He's so much cooler than us, Victor. I'm kind of, Victor, I don't like it anymore. It's not funny anymore, Victor.
I lift up my pant leg and there's a bayonet there.
Ugh.
And I have brass knuckles in my pocket.
I've been telling you, I want to get a gun. I don't know why the lighthouse does not give us guns.
Why do I have a two-shot gun that's so not practical in the scheme of our line of work?
Hey, I mean, the six-shot isn't too bad.
The reason you have a two-shot gun, Arthur, is because you'll be lucky to get the second shot off.
That's a lot of smack talk, Dom.
I wouldn't even mind a one-shot gun.
Do you want to just I take a shot and then I hand you my gun and then it's kind of like a one-shot gun?
It would be kind of a hassle, but I mean, I would like to.
Do you just want to hold it for now?
You ever held a gun, kid?
All right, take the gun.
I'm kind of scared.
Hey, aim it away from people.
Victor, take the gun.
Okay.
And Victor will kind of grab it, and you can tell that there's, like, he's not used to the weight of it, so his hand immediately kind of, like, ooh, like, drops a little bit.
We're inside the carriage at this point, right?
I was going to ask, are you guys on the street right now?
I think this is in the street. This is 100% in the street.
I was like, I'm about to fucking have you make some sleight of hand rolls. Jesus Christ.
This is absolutely not hiding it in the middle of the street.
Oh my God.
Absolutely no doubt.
Yeah, sorry, a hide check. I was like, I'm about to be like, you know, man. There's some sentinel officers patrolling. Like,
I'm screaming, Victor, take the gun.
Take the gun.
As you say that, the carriage window opens up, and the carriage driver just like looks down and just shakes their head and shuts it. Okay, so you arrive at the apartment. Upon entering the foyer, you're greeted by like this warm, welcoming interior as you head toward a set of stairs. As you ascend, you hear the creaking wooden staircase to the floor where Charlie's apartment is located. The hallway itself is dimly lit by flickering electric lamps, casting a bit of an eerie shadow along the faded wallpaper on the walls. Approaching Charlie's apartment, you see the door is closed, but you do notice the faint smell of tobacco smoke wafting from beneath the door, but it's mingling with this musty scent of old books and ink. There is also a sharp, acrid smell that seems to stand out. So as you reach the door, what would y'all like to do?
What kind of tone are we taking here? What are we suspecting Charlie of right now?
I was expecting like a full-on like brawling fight, but I don't know. It kind of smells like there's just somebody living here.
Well, I think we established the knife in the thigh on sight kind of mentality here.
Do monsters smoke? It kind of sounds like a wild question, but I don't know. You were in the war. Is that something that they can do?
Monsters can do anything and sometimes be anyone.
I get that, but like in private, do you think they'd keep up the facade and smoke? What if it's just like some innocent guy in there and we come in and we knife his thigh and it turns out it's just like his neighbor?
Well, we open the door and we say, you know, are you him? And if he says yes, then you shoot him in the leg. And then we figure it out after. I think that's kind of the plan. Because if you shoot him in the leg and he's not a normal guy, he's going to like, we're going to know.
I've never shot a gun. I don't know. I mean, I can aim and I assume I pull the trigger, but
that's about it.
I don't know how good my aim is.
I mean, he's probably got a big thigh. It's like one of the biggest pieces, you know, so.
Dominic stands up extra tall. Boys, let's be professional here. Let's knock on the door, question him, be ready for violence at any second. Agreed?
Sounds good to me, Captain.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's Sergeant, but not Sergeant anymore. Thank you.
Sure.
As you go to knock on the door, I will mention, with it being an apartment complex, there are other doors on the same floor with you. So keep that in mind. As you knock on the door, there is no answer. But you do hear a door open up down the hallway, and this old lady pokes her head out.
Hey, ma'am, how you doing?
Good.
Scott, go question her. I'm going to open up the door now.
The door is locked.
I'm going to shoulder it.
Excuse me, what are you doing?
A wellness check. We are his friends. We are worried.
I'm going to
talk to her.
Hi, ma'am. How you doing? We're just checking in on our friend here. We haven't heard from him in a few weeks.
Okay. Mr. Kipper?
Yes, Mr. Kipper. He used to meet me every Thursday for drinks. Mm-hmm. I just haven't seen him in a few.
Yep, every Thursday.
I don't know if you should be... Why are you breaking into his home?
Oh, well, ma'am, we worry for his safety, you know. We just want to make sure everything's all right.
I saw Mr. Kipper last night.
You did?
Uh-huh.
You know, that's good to hear. I mean, where did you happen to see him?
Oh, I was just walking my little... And you see there's a little dog. It's like a little Yorkie. I was taking Peaches out for a walk, and I saw Mr. Kipper. They waved back.
Oh, Peaches, that's wonderful. That's good. That's good.
While they're keeping her busy, I'm definitely breaking in.
Wait. Is there a doormat or a plant?
He's had time to jump out a window. I gotta get in.
No, there's not. So, Dom, I'm gonna have you... You gotta make a roll for me.
It's a strike.
It's a strike, baby. High stakes.
Three dice. One's killed.
And high stakes is because of... This old lady.
You know what? I'll put in a couple drives.
Why is your friend...
Just one drive.
Are you going to hurt Mr. Kipper?
No, sure, ma'am. Of course not. Really, he's a friend of mine. Doors. He's a friend of mine.
Really hates doors.
I've got five.
She's like, she's going to leave, but she closes her door in front of Victor and Scott. And you hear like the sound of...
Oh. I start knocking again.
We got a couple minutes. Let's do this.
Okay. Countdown dice has been added. You shoulder the door, Dom. As you enter the apartment, it's definitely a bachelor's pad, but there's vintage furniture that's juxtaposed against sleek, contemporary gadgets that you see in this space. However, what stands out when you bust through that door is a wall covered in this eclectic array of papers and notes pinned haphazardly in this frenzied manner.
Oh, see, now that's worrying.
There does not sound like there's anyone in here, but you see
on this wall, cryptic symbols and diagrams on these pages.
Okay, Victor and Arthur, take everything down, gather it all up. Scott with me. We need to look at the other rooms in the apartment.
Before I move past the doorway, I want to make sure that I close the door behind me. And then once it's closed, I'll take out my gun and follow Dom.
Okay, pretty small apartment. When you enter in, there's living room, kitchen, dining room is in that first space. Walking forward, kind of straight in, to the left, there's another doorway leading into the bedroom, and then to the right of that is a bathroom. Both doors are closed.
Of course.
I'll take one, you take the other.
How about you cover me, and we'll do the bathroom first. I'll get the door you cover.
Sure.
You go to the bathroom door, open it up, and that's where we're going to end the episode.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
All right. All right.
Oh. Oh, my.
I was so close to being like, Scott, just break into her apartment too. Just do it. Just kick in the door for her apartment. It's whatever, bro. I guess we're holding people at gunpoint all of a sudden, yeah. But you know, here we are.
Yeah, vigilantes now.
That's what Candela Obscura is all about, baby.
Yeah.
We've descended.
Yeah. Hello, hello! Kylie Hollop here, Game Master of Season 1 of the Streets of Nevermore podcast. I wanted to take a moment to shout out our Patreon subscribers, Benjamin Hadler, Kenneth Torek, The Final Homes, Seth George, and The Third Man for your support. If you're interested in becoming a Patreon of the podcast, please head over to patreon.com/Dicescape to learn more about the available tiers and the perks you get for becoming a Dicescape Patreon subscriber. Some of those extra perks and bonus content is available now on the Patreon, including Victor Crowell's audio logs, Office Hours with Professor Wright, and After Hours with the entire cast. Links to our Patreon will be found in the show notes and a link to a video breaking down the various Patreon tiers. Your patronage helps support our small team scattered across the country, put together each episode as we continue to refine our craft, utilize better resources so that we can deliver continually evolving episodes throughout the remainder of the season and beyond. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to sharing the next episodes with you here soon. Bye-bye. Streets of Nevermore, a Dicescape podcast, was created using the Darrington Press Community Gaming License. The Illuminated World Standard Resource Document is owned and copyrighted by Darrington Press, LLC, all rights reserved. Streets of Nevermore, a Dicescape podcast, is adapted and based on content created and owned by Darrington Press. Candela Obscura, Darrington Press, LLC, 2023, available at darringtonpress.com.